Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing on Thursday morning. Joining us from the Boston Celtics practice facility, is it called the Auerbach Center, Tim Bontemps?
It is called the Auerbach Center. And hello, fellas.
Yes, he flew up from New York today. Tonight, Warriors Celtics. And joining us from Dallas, Texas, Bontemps, I think there's a chance he might get banned again. It's Ben McCann.
Howdy, partners. I can report there was no problems with my credential last night. If the Mavericks players are working security, I'd be able to get past them anyway.
Well, it's interesting you say that.
That's a defense joke. It's a defense joke.
Right. I understand. They gave up 130, three games in a row? Or four games in a row or something like that?
Three games in a row. Jay Kidd, I think, has had his fill of that. By the way, Bontemps, for those watching on YouTube, have you ever seen an uglier leprechaun than Bontemps in the middle of that Celtics logo?
they wouldn't call him lucky. I'm trying to get this tweet because I want to read it exactly correctly. You issued this tweet yesterday afternoon. Mark Cuban denies Luka Doncic has indicated he wants the roster to be upgraded, and he goes on the record to say the following. Mark Cuban, quote, and again, this is in Tim McMahon's Twitter feed. Mark Cuban, quote, Tim McMahon got it dead wrong. Luka has never suggested, asked, demanded, or discussed changes to the roster. And then there was a second tweet.
I was going to say, the second tweet's important too.
Cuban continued. Luka and Nico have a great relationship. Nico Harrison, the team GM, have a great relationship. They talk almost daily. Luka knows exactly what we have going on and is very supportive.
I think they know. He knows exactly what they're thinking in terms of like lunch orders and, you know, possible uniform stuff, because he's never even discussed changes to the roster. Cuban said that seconds earlier. Never discussed them. Right. So their daily talks are about other things, obviously.
How about Luka's new tank truck that he drove to the game yesterday?
Dude, this guy collects cars, and that thing's not collects automobiles. That's not a car. That is a tank. He collects automobiles like I used to collect baseball cards, or like people collect sneakers. He has got a collection, but that thing is.
Plus, don't you think he's got a collection back in Slovenia?
I'm sure he does. So Hassan Whiteside, I believe, still has, but certainly had one of those type of things that he parked. It would be parked regularly outside the Jazz's facility last year. Stenciled on the side was Big Shirley. That was that truck's name. It wasn't a joking mood last night post game after their third straight loss, fifth loss in six games, so on and so forth. So didn't get to inquire about potential names for this beast that Luke is driving, but it is. I mean, it's a check out Mark Jones's Twitter if you want to see it. It's an impressive an impressive specimen.
Yeah. Well, I just think people thought it was funny that you in your own Twitter feed quoted Mark Cuban saying you were wrong.
And Cuban demanded a correction, and I told him I'm not going to correct something that is accurate information. And I said, if you want to make a statement, I'm happy to report it. And that's the statement that he made.
There you go.
So, which is fair. And listen, I understand we can discuss semantics here. And it's a sensitive subject, and they are very sensitive to the perception that Luka is trying to dump teammates or that sort of thing. And Luka's sensitive to that. There was a mural that was painted in the Deep Ellum section of Dallas recently. And the artist like sent out a picture of it to all the media. And so, it got some attention. And it was a picture of Luka holding up a sign that said, please send help, with some of his more bonkers stat lines around him. Cuban emailed that this is a true story. Mavs Moneyball, one of the Mavs blogs, wrote about this. Cuban emailed he emailed the artist and like got on his butt. It was very upset about this. God, these guys tweet and write a lot of stuff. Anyways, I'm not gonna find it. So I can't scroll down that far. But so I won't quote it exactly, but the artist said something along the lines of, you know, I was just hoping that Mark would see this and you know, kind of be spurred into action. Like, well, bro,
this is what
it doesn't take paintbrushes to figure out that this team that's now two games above 500 with a shortlist MVP candidate putting up the best numbers of his career needs to upgrade. And that honestly, my thought when I wrote this in paragraph 33 of a story was it was almost like a no bleep statement. Like, you know, sources say Luka Doncic thinks Texas summers are too damn hot. Well, you know what I mean? Because obviously they need to upgrade, but the whole point was this tough spot that they're in.
This is the sort of thing that I refer to as majoring in the minor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I understand, you know, one of the things that's key for an organization to do is to control the message. And when they can't control the message, it's very frustrating. Trust me, that's the world we live in. Right. We're the messengers. So, but, you know, worrying about a painting or squibbling or, you know, dabbling with something that you had written like that is majoring in the minor.
Right.
And especially when the team is not playing well, like they are right now, regardless of the way he actually feels. It's also unusual for an owner with as much experience as Mark Cuban to be focused on that right now. He's got a lot more.
He's majored in a lot of minor in his day. And certainly, and I get it. You want to protect the player. The player, your superstar, the face of your franchise, does not want to be perceived as a guy. And he's really the newsworthy thing here is that Luka is starting to be much more involved in the personnel discussions, where previously it's always been like, I mean, y'all can let me know, but I don't really want to be involved in that. Now he's starting to be, you know, much more involved. And, you know, the ideas aren't just being bounced off of him, is my understanding, that he's bouncing some ideas the other way as well.
Well, I mean, your reporting on the Mavs over the years has got a pretty good track record. You know, it is an interesting time. So we're 3 weeks from today is the trade deadline. I don't know how you feel about this, Bontemps. I definitely feel an uptick in rumors. So that probably means the correlation of an uptick in beginning of talks. Still don't have any stuff that I feel is significantly actionable, but we're starting to see stuff take a little bit of shape. But you know, one of the things that's been identified here, and you know, Cuban's reaction to McMahon and the painting and whatnot, is an illustration that there are some teams that are starting to feel, or maybe even have been feeling, pressure to try to, you know, to try to do something. And there might not be that much to do, but certainly there's a lot of parity, maybe not in the actual roster quality, but there's a lot of parity in the standings. And so there's quite a few teams that are definitely underachieving. And so Dallas is kind of one of them, even though they've been really messed up with injuries recently, and they can point to that and be fair that that's affected them. But, you know, there's some teams that are under some pressure to upgrade. And, you know, I think we're going to talk about a few of them right now. I don't know if you want to start with the Mavericks, Bontemps, but certainly that's, you can start to feel that. I don't know about you, but I can.
Yeah. I mean, I still think we're in this holding pattern because with the advent of the play-in tournament, like we've talked about before, I just don't think we're going to see anything really happen until February. It's just, you know, we've got about 9 days in February until the trade deadline. I think that's when we're going to see the vast majority of the business get done because everybody is kind of just waiting to see where they're at on February 1st. I mean, look at the Western Conference standings as an example. There are currently 5 teams in the Western Conference that are over 500. 5. The Mavs are 2 games over 500. You say the Mavs are underachieving. The Mavs are 2 games over 500. They're in 5th place. You got Phoenix in 12th. You got Minnesota in 10th. You got the Clippers 23 and 24. How about this? The Oklahoma City Thunder are 1 game under 500. The LA Clippers are 1 game under 500. Talk about a team under pressure. We'll get to them in a minute.
They have swap rights.
That's right.
who would have thought those swap rights might be worthless? That's hilarious.
That's right.
I will point something out. So we're recording this on January 19th. The pod will come out January 20th. Last year, on January 21st, the Celtics lost. I can't remember who they lost to. But the Celtics lost to Portland. To fall to 23 and
lost to Portland at home.
To fall to 23 and 24. Now, that was obviously not a normal course of a season. There were numerous factors that played into all that. But the Celtics were under 500 in these same days last year and were ahead in the finals 2-1. Okay. So when you're a team out there that is around 500 right now, I wouldn't necessarily feel great about that, but it is still there for the taking in both conferences, although I think more the West than the East.
Oh, no, definitely way more in the West. But we're getting a little over a field. Let's get back to your microphone a little, bro.
You're like eating it and you're popping my ears.
I'm in a weird setup here. I'm trying to eat the thing.
He's on the road. He's in the field.
Let's get back to what we started with, though, and talk
about who we're going to start with.
We're going to start with Dallas. We got to start with McMahon's team, and it goes back to for all the window dressing that you know Cuban had tried to put on it with this ridiculous statement yesterday. The point McMahon made is the only one that matters. Dallas has a flawed roster and has limited ways to improve it, whether they want to improve it or not. They don't have a lot of interesting pieces to trade. They're limited on picks for now. They're in a spot where the West is completely wide open. They're one of 6, 7, 8 teams. You could make an argument, could win the West if things break right. Ideally, to do that, they would upgrade the roster. Mm-hmm. And to me, looking at it right now, there's not a clean path to them doing that. They're pretty limited in what they can do, and it's going to make the process of trying to make this team better pretty complicated for them.
Right. And when you say they're pretty limited, they still owe the pick. It's top 10 protected. It'll convey this year for the Kristaps Porzingis deal. So their previous big swing, which obviously ended up being a swing and a miss, still hasn't been paid. They still desperately need to get a co-star in place. Whether they need a co-superstar, you know, maybe Luka's good enough to where they just need a top 20-ish player, not another top 10 player, whatever. But they've got to figure out a path to get that co-star. And then, you know, we've talked about modern NBA math. You don't want to get to a point where the face of your franchise is only 2 years out on his deal without having a championship caliber team in place. You know, so you're looking at a year and a half time span. Point is, they obviously want to upgrade. They also have to be extremely selective about whether they use the first round pick, because almost certainly they're going to need to bundle picks to get that star. And so I'm talking to, and again, that's more of a this summer, next deadline, maybe even the summer after that type of thing. And I'm talking to a pro scout on a team that's a contender. And I use his quote. He said it. And I'm like, man, that really sums it up. Can I use that? He says, it's a really tough spot, and it's the pressure great players place on the organization. You want to be good, but the balance of patience and competitiveness is a really hard line to walk. The Mavericks want to upgrade, but they also need to be patient. The problem is, you know, patience, it's not necessarily a set timeline, but it's a set timeline in terms of when you might really have to worry about things going south.
Well, and one other thing real quick, to go back to your initial joke about the players being able to not stop you from getting in the building if you got banned. We've talked a lot about how, you know, at least we've talked some about the Kings this year and how the real question about whether they're actually going to be able to push forward and make the playoffs is where their defense is going to be. By the way, Sacramento, fourth place right now in the West. Pretty remarkable. Won 5 games in a row. Third place in the West. And on top of that, the Kings right now, 24th in defense, giving up 114.6 points per 100 possessions. Dallas is in 25th, giving up 115. If they want to have any chance of being a true title contended team, they have to do something about their defense over the next few weeks, probably, because the current roster is not going to be good enough defensively to get where they want to go.
Yeah, the good news is they got Dorian Finney-Smith and Josh Green back last night, two of their top three or four defenders. Bad news is they still gave up 130 to the Hawks. More good news is Maxi Kleba, who tore his hamstring and underwent surgery, which caused Chris Middleton, a few years back, to miss 4 months. He was on the team's pregame show last night on their broadcast and said he'll be back, maybe even by the All-Star break, which is shocking. And he is absolutely kind of the glue that holds their defense together. But, J. Kidd, like I said, he kind of fired away about their defense last night. I said, other than getting guys back, how do you fix this? And he started his answer by saying, if it's with this personnel, then you've got to keep asking or demanding for those guys to play defense. If it's with this personnel, I don't
know. Does Jason Kidd want upgrades? What about? Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. You brought up Sac real quick. One of their beat writers, James Hamm, brought this to my attention. The Kings currently have the best road record in the Western Conference.
Wow. It's impressive.
And that is saying something, especially for a team that's 24th in defense. Your story about last night's game, McMahon, you pointed out that Dallas has gone from 7th in defense last year to 25th in defense this year.
Yeah, and losing Jalen Brunson is not the reason for that.
Yeah, so they lost
Jalen Brunson. He helped them in a lot of ways, but that wasn't...
Right, so they lost one of their best, their second best, would you say their second best offensive player?
I'd say the second best player, period. Yes.
Okay. And then they've backslid in defense. So it's just, I can understand why they're sensitive, but they're also facing reality.
Well, Christian Wood, we still have that situation. Are they going to work out an extension short term? If not, is he going to be traded? He's had, like in the Lakers game, he had some clutch blocks down the stretch. He's had some, a string of multi-block games. But the simple fact of the matter is he is a phenomenal offensive player who, if he's your starting center, you're going to have some significant defensive issues. And that's part of this. The whole league right now is about outscoring the opponent. But as Jay Kidd said, hey, if you're giving up 130, you ain't outscoring that. You can't, there's a limit.
All right, let's talk about another team under some pressure, the LA Clippers, who lost their ninth time in 11 games on Wednesday night in Utah. It wasn't a surprising loss because they sat everybody. It was the second night of a back-to-back, and John Wall is now out for a few weeks with an abdominal injury. They have one of the hardest remaining schedules in the league. They are in a stretch right now where they, I believe, play 8 of 9 on the road. Maybe it's even 9 of 10 on the road. They have back-to-back multi-game road trips with one home game in between, and it runs right into the trade deadline. Kawhi has begun to really start to string together some more impressive performances. He was shaky when he first came back, which is understandable. When I say first came back, he came back and then he was out with an unannounced injury for 15 games. Then he came back again, and now he's starting to show some stuff. But the team has absolutely no identity and no traction whatsoever from the first quarter to the fourth quarter, from Monday to Tuesday, from Tuesday to Friday. Mm-hmm. It is, Ty Lue has changed the lineup a whole bunch of times. He's changed who he's had a point guard. He's been searching like crazy for minutes at center because they don't have anybody really that they can count on, which they tend to get slaughtered
outside of Zubac.
When Zubac leaves the floor. Recently, they've had this issue where Kawhi will play the whole third quarter, and then they rest him to start the fourth. And then when he comes back in the fourth, he can't restart. That was one of the things, all year long they've been trying, and Kawhi himself has been trying to figure out how to moderate his minutes. His minutes are now up, but he's having trouble, connecting it. It's just one giant wet noodle. There's just nothing there. And so Bontemps, they are a candidate to make a trade because they have tradable pieces. And I do believe that they can now trade a first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
They can trade one.
I think it's 2028. They can trade. Mm-hmm. They got, or 2029, I guess, but they got to the point past the what they owe the Thunder, where they can make a trade. They have money, they have tradable assets, they have a pick, and they probably need to address point guard because it's all over the place, or backup center, or both. And this team, they definitely could be a Celtics story. I can't sit here and say I think that's going to happen, but the thing about the Celtics is you couldn't argue they had a bunch of talent. So the one thing the Celtics had going for them was the talent. Well, the Clippers have talent. So they are now going to try to manufacture a Celtics story. The Celtics did make a trade last year, bringing in Derek White. I wouldn't say it revolutionized. It helped. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's
they had already more than taken off by then. Obviously,
that's true.
The Derek White trade definitely helped, but they had more than taken off by then. Look, if you're trying to write the positive narrative for the Clippers, right? It's that Kawhi Leonard and Paul George have played together in 16 games. That's a third of their games. And when they've been on the court, they've outscored teams by almost 8 points per 100 possessions, right? That's if you're trying to look at this as an optimistic Clippers person, you say, all right, those guys are on the court and available. Clippers are going to have a chance to beat anybody, especially in what's a very down, very wide open Western Conference. That said, as we all know, and McMahon immediately started shaking his head correctly, there's no guarantee these guys are going to be able to be on the court on a regular basis over the next couple of months, going into a very difficult schedule. You mentioned the point guard spot. I forget about backup center. The Clippers are not playing centers other than Zubac in games that matter in the playoffs anyway. If they make an upgrade, it's got to be a point guard. That's because Reggie Jackson and John Wall have both been bad. They've been outscored by 3 points per 100 with Reggie Jackson.
He's basically gone to Terrence Mann. Terrence Mann is who they're playing.
Right. Terrence Mann has been better because John Wall's been on the court, they've been getting outscored by 6.5 points per 100 possessions, worst on the team. Like, that is just
I blame the Rockets for that.
An iconic interview from John Wall on that.
On Theo Pinson's, Theo Pinson's podcast.
Who knew he had a pod? Congrats.
Well, I mean, it is something. It is amazing. He had a pod.
Love that he was trash talking. He was still doing Wizards trash talk about 2016-17. He was still sticking to that trash talk. I actually tip my cap. I really like John.
I love John. John's a wildly entertaining guy. But
yeah, I love John.
It has been a struggle with him on the court this year. It's been a struggle with Reggie on the court. The Clippers have to upgrade that spot, in my opinion, over the next month. We'll see if they do. And they're under a ton of pressure. I mean, we mentioned the pick swap. There's some realm of possibility now where the Thunder make the playoffs. They have one of the four or five best players in a play-in tournament, right? The Thunder, if the Thunder are in the play-in tournament and they got to win two games, they might have the best player on the court, very possibly in both games. Like it is,
and by the way,
it is definitely possible they could do that.
Real quick, Jalen Williams, the Jalen Williams wing, the guard forward Jalen Williams, is right now probably a serious contender to be first team all rookie for the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Yeah.
That pick was the Clippers pick. So already they have given a lottery pick that is materially helping a team that is now maybe beating them out for a playoff spot.
A lottery pick plus the guy who at the time was a lottery pick coming off his rookie season is now an all NBA player. Like Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will be an all-NBA player.
That goes without saying.
And fellas, how delicious would it be right now? OKC's 9, the Clippers are 8, and they're in a virtual tie. How juicy would it be if those two teams end up meeting for the last spot in the playoffs?
It'd be pretty incredible. It'd be pretty incredible if they did. There's no question. But it's possible. So if we're talking about teams that are under pressure, there's probably not a single team that's under more pressure in the league right now than the Clippers, because they sold everything out for this team, and so far they have one conference finals appearance to show for it, and right now they're under 500, more than halfway through the year, and they feel a lot like the 18-19 Celtics, a team everybody told me all year was going to come together, was going to be fine, the talent was going to work out, and it just never did.
And their two max stars are on the wrong side of 30. The payroll is $192 million this year, a bit over $200 million next year, Steve, plus tax. So, I mean, I don't have a Bobby Marks calculator.
It's 400 million.
There you go. Brian Windhorst has that big old brain.
Next year, it'll be around $400 million next year.
Whatever the number is, it's an astronomical amount.
Steve Ballmer ain't paying that money to have a cute little play-in team.
True.
That's for sure. And so you know, there's been reports about links to, you know, or interest in Mike Conley, which that makes perfect sense. I mean, they don't necessarily need a point guard.
Conley played very well against them last night.
Yeah, and they don't necessarily need a point guard who's going to dominate the ball, but they need a guy who can get them in their offense, who can also play off the ball, who's going to be a pro. Like Conley would be a phenomenal fit. You got to make a deal that makes sense for the Jazz. Danny Ainge doesn't make deals just to be a nice guy. So, you know,
he wants other people to give him deals where they're very nice guys. That's what he specializes in. He gets other people to be nice guys.
And, you know, like you want to dump Reggie Jackson, you know, like if the Jazz wanted Robert Covington, they'd have got him last year. You know, when the Blazers were trying to move them and ended up moving them. I mean, they sent Joe Ingles to Portland if they want to come.
Speaking of first team all rookie candidates, Walker Kessler is a quick aside.
Probably a first team all rookie lock the way that he's playing. But like, you know, Danny Ainge is going to have these guys over a barrel if they're really that interesting.
Well, how many other suitors are there for Mike Conley?
That's the tricky part. I mean, the Clippers do have a bunch of interesting young guys they could throw in a deal. They've got BJ Boston, they've got Mann who they could put in a deal, they've got Jason Preston who they could put in a deal, they've got Amir Coffey on a good contract they could put in a deal. Like they've got some
Kennard,
guys they could throw together.
Could be interesting.
Well, Kennard is the ballast in a trade too. I mean, that's
Right. They have a bunch of mid-tier salaries that they can make work in trades. You know, Kennard, Covington, Reggie Jackson. They could put Wall in a trade. They got a lot of guys they could throw in there if they want. They've got some interesting young guys. They've got a pick. They have stuff they can cobble together. But whatever it is, they're going to have one shot at it. And again, they gotta hit on it because they're all in and pot committed on this team.
I'm not in the Clippers locker room, to be clear, but it looks like a team that could use some, you know, some leadership.
Yeah.
And Conley potentially is that type of player. All right. Another team under some pressure is a team in the same building, the LA Lakers. And I think Bontemps, you have some trivia before we move on to that.
I do have trivia. It's little Lakers related trivia brought to us by the great Stats Williams.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
It's time for a Hoop Collective Trivia.
So earlier this week, we saw LeBron go off for 48 against McMahon's Houston Rockets, and Jamari Smith Jr. had a moment with Jabari Smith Sr. Courtside. There are 8 different father-son combinations that LeBron has played in his career. Wow, one of them 8. Is
That's
obviously
interesting.
One of them is obviously the Smiths. There are 7 more.
Well, there was another one in that game.
Yeah, right. Kenyon Martin Jr. was in that game.
And
it's funny.
And that's there's correct. A father coach. He played for Paul Silas, and Steven Silas was coaching.
Right. That is nice, also true. Like they had a nice moment before the game there.
Yeah.
It's funny. Out of curiosity, I looked up to see if LeBron played against either Tim Hardaway Sr. or Del Curry. He just missed both those guys.
I will tell you right now. I will tell you right now that there were at least 10 guys that just missed.
Yeah.
I was doing this with Stats Williams the other day, trying to answer it myself. And I missed.
Well,
just
to be clear, LeBron's trying to play with his own son in the next 2 years. So of course, when he came to the league, he was 18. So it's not a surprise.
But I'm thinking, did he play with one of these 30 something vets, dads, but, Gary Trent Jr. AJ Griffin.
That's the fourth one.
Oh, wow.
There's four more total.
I like AJ Griffin, by the way. I think he's going to be a really nice player
for Atlanta. He is a very, very good player.
The Hawks, by the way, might be catching a little bit something here. And Trae Young and DeJounte Murray are starting to get a little bit of traction together. But we'll talk about that in another time.
So there's four. The Smiths, the Griffins, the Martins, and the Trents. There's 4 more after that.
Jay Crowder's dad didn't hang around long enough. I'm trying to think. I'm skimming through.
There's one of them that's not in the league now that I can almost guarantee no one's going to say. So I'll give you that one. It's Glenn Robinson, and Glenn Robinson the third is one of them.
Big dog.
The other three are all that's why the other three are all playing in the league right now.
He didn't play. He didn't play against Wes Matthews Sr. Nope. I'm just skimming the standings here, thinking of NBA.
One of them came up earlier on the podcast. I mean, an NBA son who came up earlier on the podcast, I think, is a pretty good hint, especially for McMahon. Played in Dallas last year.
Oh, Jalen Brunson.
Brunson.
Yeah, Jalen
Brunson. Wow,
he played against Rick Brunson. Wow,
I would have lost that.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah,
Rick. I was covering these games. I don't remember.
Rick probably didn't play a whole lot.
Jabari Smith Senior.
So there.
No, he was actually DMPCD in LeBron's debut. Yeah, but I don't remember that. We don't get bogged down. I looked it up.
There's 2 more. One of them is the son of. One of them is the son of a Hall of Famer.
Son of a Hall of Famer.
Won a title last year.
Klay Thompson. No way. No way. Wasn't there. That's right.
Right. Right team. Wrong name. That's right.
Wiggins. He didn't play against
Wiggins. Dad's a Hall of Famer.
Oh, of course.
Mitchell Wiggins' dad ain't a Hall of Famer.
Sorry.
The same team, though. Sorry. We're getting farther down the list. He didn't start for Golden State last year. He came off the bench.
Gary Payton II. Right. Gary Payton II.
Gary Payton II. And the final one is the son of a former Laker, was drafted as a rookie this year.
I'm cheating and looking at the draft this year.
I'm even going to give you a further hint just to speed it along. He was drafted by our guy, Mike Schmitz.
Oh, Shedon Sharpe? No. Samaki Walker's son.
That's right. Samaki and Jabari Walker. Those are the 8. Father son.
Samaki Walker is a former Laker. That's former Mavs lottery pick, Samaki Walker.
There you go.
Former, I would say he was a former Heat.
He was just tying him back to the Lakers.
He was a former lot of things. That's a good one.
I thought that was a very good trivia question from our guy Stats. Good job. That was a hard one.
All right. The Lakers have lost the last three games by a total of 9 points. And it's this kind of stuff that if they miss the play-in, it's this kind of stuff that is going to keep them out. Because they are, like, I think they're 9-10 since Anthony Davis went down with injury.
Hey, it's better than you thought.
Of course. And LeBron's missed some of those games. And, like, they had a game in Denver last week where they just spiked it. Denver's won, like, 15 in a row at home. They knew they weren't winning. LeBron took it off. And, you know, like, they are just, you know, but by the way, this is what happens to bad teams. You know, you are five games below or six games, whatever they are, 5 or 6 games below 500 because you can't handle your business at the end of games because Russ runs into traffic. And this is why LeBron is screaming about the calls. And, like, look, you know, in that Dallas game, like, there were some calls that hurt them clearly, but that's the
Wood
thing.
Did hack LeBron going to the basket.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's the thing though. Like, when you're, like, screaming about the officiating, it's because you need everything. And LeBron talked about that last night. He said, we have no margin for error. And he's right. Like, they get a bad call and they can't, you know, in some cases they can't survive it. So, like on one hand, I would say that they're probably achieving what they should achieve without Anthony Davis. This is probably who they are.
I mean, this is better than who they are. I mean, if you'd said when he went out, they were going to be 500 without Anthony Davis, literally anybody with the Lakers would have instantly signed up for that. Instantly.
They started the season 2-10 and they are above 500 since then, even though Anthony Davis has missed a huge chunk of those games. That is not something I expected. So the question really is, and it's just been beat to death. I don't blame Rob Pelinka, and, you know, if it's Jeannie Buss's approval, I don't blame Jeannie Buss either. If they're not looking to cut into the future to try to get this team to the play-in tournament.
Yeah, for this team, like, come on, man.
Which is music to David Griffin's ears.
For sure. But, like, dude, you're five games under 500 and you're talking about giving up 2027, 2029 first round picks to, and honestly, at this point, it would have to be like we can talk about Pat Bev, Kendrick Nunn, those contracts. Russ, for all of his late game, what the bleep are you doings? He's their second best player right now.
By plus minus, he has been there. I mean, you know, that's a flawed stat, but by plus minus, he has been their second best player since Anthony Davis went out.
He damn sure ain't their biggest problem right now. You know, like, oh, yeah. Go ahead, Wendy. You had something to say.
Well, I'm just, you know, they got a ton of problems.
that they do.
A Russ discussion about the Lakers is the definition, I think, of majoring in the minor to call back to the beginning of the pod. You know, it's not, I'm not saying that it's like whether he's their second best player or not, it's irrelevant to the many, many issues that they've got, I mean, including the fact that they've had the fifth easiest schedule so far, and they have the 10th hardest remaining for a team by our strength of schedule metrics, which again points to the fact that they've been managed to stay afloat without AD, but this thing ain't going to get any easier for them going forward.
Freshen me up on the latest AD injury info.
He's been working out with only a little bit of pain in his foot, I think is the way Darvin Ham put it yesterday. Mostly pain-free, I think. I don't have the exact quote in front of me. I think I'm paraphrasing. So he's able to do workouts, but he is not doing practice and he's not totally pain-free. So look, when this injury happened, and also when the Lakers put out the report that it was the navicular bone, which is extremely scary, I think it was fortunate that they didn't say he's out for the season.
Right.
Or he's out for 3 months. So if he's able to come back with any window for the Lakers to crawl into the play-in, it's great news for them. Mm-hmm. The question really for them is there a trade with Nunn and Beverly, the two expiring contracts out there? Is there a trade that they can make that can maybe give them a little bit of margin for error? And trust me, they have been looking at it. You know, yeah, they have been they have been having conversations and, you know, they don't like the options, period. You know, so they might do something, but this, you know, and LeBron knows it too. And I think what LeBron wants is them just to be aggressively trying for it.
Well, and they're in a tough spot for a wide variety of reasons, but we mentioned the picks and not wanting to mortgage your future. And like, maybe next year they are going to have a better chance to be competitive. And boy, you want to be able to have those picks at your disposal then.
Well, to be honest also, with you, I mean, like, it depends on what they have to do this summer too. Like, do they honestly think they're going to have, they want to be a cap space team this summer? Are they going to go hunting in free agency? I mean, I don't know about that.
Yeah. So if you talk about a deal where what you're doing is dangling expirings, then almost certainly you're taking back a longer term contract, you know, because you're dangling expirings. The attraction there is if the team's trying to get off some money. So like, do you want to be able to be shoppers this summer, or do you want to punt on that? I think that's pretty dicey too.
Yeah.
There are no easy. This is the Mavs discussion on steroids, right? Mm-hmm. There is no easy solution here whatsoever. You know, they've got a lot of hard decisions they have to try to make.
Yeah. The only thing is LeBron's already signed the extension. If LeBron hadn't signed the extension, the tenor of this discussion would be completely different, but he did. So, okay. Bontemps, last week you wrote about the Raptors. The Raptors, I think probably right now, unless you disagree, are the most discussed team about, you know, amongst when I talked to league executives, what are the Raptors going to do is the most discussed team in the league right now.
That was the whole point of that story. So I certainly agree.
And basically what you wrote was, I don't want to take it away from you, but basically what you wrote is the Raptors control this trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, they have the kinds of players that if they decide to get in the marketplace and sell, they have the guys that could fundamentally change title odds for teams. Mm-hmm. As we sit here right now, we're 3 weeks from the deadline as we talk right now. It does not seem clear to me that there's going to be any players that really can move the needle that are going to be available. And of the teams that could potentially jump in the Derby and really start trying to move guys, Toronto is the one sitting there with real pieces that they could move. And that's why, to your point, Brian, that's the topic everybody's sort of looking at, especially while we're in this period where you've got 25 teams that could still make the playoffs and everybody's sort of in a holding pattern. As a result, Toronto has had a disappointing year. They've got Gary Trent and Fred VanVleet, who could both be free agents. Mm-hmm. They've got other, you know, Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby, two very talented young forwards also, or in their prime forwards, in Pascal's case, still in his 20s. Mm-hmm. You know, they've got the kind of guys where if they say, all right, like, doors open, come in and start at, you know, shopping around, there'd be bidding wars on those guys. So yeah, I think, you know, if they decide to stand pat, then this trade line, I think, could be pretty quiet. If they decide to go after it, then things could get pretty spicy pretty fast.
Spicy, well, look, I like that.
So Van Vliet's situation is interesting reference. Because if they're worried about extending him, mm-hmm. they almost are compelled to trade him.
Second, and by the way, the Mavericks on Brunson, they're like, you know, we're going to, like, Fred Van Vliet money is as high as we can go. Well, Fred Van Vliet money in the last contract and Fred Van Vliet money in the next contract are two widely different things.
Well, look, I talked to Fred about this when I was up there in Toronto, and I asked him about, you know, because he had the ability to extend before the season. He could, by the way, opt out at any point of his contract for next year and extend, same extension number. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of $115 million over 4 years. And he said, look, without getting into it, I think I'll play that contract and I don't want to make it easy on these guys and lock into that. So that tells you that he thinks he should get more than that. The Raptors certainly would have been happy if he signed that extension. The fact he didn't puts you in an interesting middle ground right now.
This is Mr. Bet on Yourself.
That's right. Like, the guy who's done that multiple times.
This is the mantra of his career is bet on himself. So,
and here's the other thing you have to factor in with the Raptors too. Over the past few years, obviously they won a title with Kawhi. So obviously that was one of the great trades in the history of the league with the way that worked out. But Kawhi Leonard leaves for nothing. Marc Gasol leaves for nothing. Serge Ibaka leaves for nothing. Kyle Lowry leaves for ultimately what became Precious Achiuwa. Those four guys have become Precious Achiuwa. That's part of the reason that the Raptors are in the spot they're in right now. This is a natural life cycle in the NBA. It's hard to beat. They've had the most wins in the East over the past decade. At some point, there comes a point where you have to make some decisions. You have some inflection points on where you're going to go. But I don't think they can afford to have guys walk out the door for free again based off of the amount of talent drain they've had. And that's where it really,
well,
I think,
it's easier to let those guys walk out the door when they had already won a ring. You know,
well, and look, when Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka left, it's also worth pointing out those two guys were on a team that was a couple possessions away from making the conference finals in the bubble. I think they would have beat Miami if they won that Celtic series. They might have won a title. So it's obviously not to say that they made a mistake in not trading those guys, but they've had a lot of talent walk out the door in recent years. And I think that only amplifies the decisions they have to make on both Gary Trent, who they got moving away from Norm Powell 2 years ago in a similar deal. Norm was going to be an unrestricted free agent. They sort of punted him down the road to get Gary Trent in his place, who was going to be a restricted free agent. Now Gary can opt out and be unrestricted. Fred can opt out and be unrestricted. I think the past history there has to play a factor into what they decide to do with those guys.
Ananobi has 1 year left. It's extension eligible, but I don't know.
Right. He's also got an option after that. Right.
I mean, Ananobi is a bit of a polarizing player because he is what everybody in the league wants, a two-way wing, tremendous size. But on the other hand, the price of players like that right now after the Gobert trade is like, I mean, I'm hearing people discuss the possibility of an Ananobi trade and what it would cost. And I'm like, oh my God.
And you're talking about like DeJounte Murray type of packages.
Yeah. I mean, well, DeJounte Murray, well, you could argue was too much.
Well, and by the way, Pascal Siakam, who's maybe has been terrific again this year, might be an all NBA player again. He's also 1.5 years away from free agency. So they got a lot of guys, four of their five core guys besides Scottie Barnes are within 18 months of free agency.
Well, here's something else I'm going to say. The Raptors could also go the other way and trade for a player to help them. Like,
that's very, what that microphone do to you? Yeah, what that microphone do to you, Wendy?
Sorry.
Well, yeah, they definitely could. They're one of the few teams, you know, you've laid it out a bunch of times, Brian. There's not many teams in the league that have control of all their picks. The Raptors have control of all their picks. There's a reason they were in the, you know, they're mentioned in the Kevin Durant stuff over the summer. They have a lot of different things they could trade. It's why Kevin Pelton and I put them in a tier where they were all in on nothing this summer, because they had the ability to go in any direction they wanted. And that's part of where I think the pressure is going to be on them over the next few weeks, is that I think they have to decide a direction one way or the other. Because I think they just feel like they're in a state of limbo there. And I think it's wearing on everybody involved.
Well, they're also not playing well, and they're in 11th place.
Yep.
I tell you what, though, man. I always want to see Ananobi on the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies, if you add one more stud two-way wing, big two-way wing.
Well, if Ananobi was really available, and
he's the perfect guy for Memphis. He's the perfect guy for just about any team.
If you had teams like Memphis or New Orleans bidding,
both of whom have all their picks plus
Phoenix bidding. Yeah. Phoenix has all their
OG.
Picks. They don't have.
OG might be a guy who's 85 or 90% of what kind of the theory of him is. He maybe not is everything, but he's one of the best plug and play players in the entire league. You could drop him in on any team and he's going to fit with what you're doing. And that makes him an immensely valuable guy. He's one of the best isolation defenders in the league. He can shoot threes. He's a good player.
You're eventually going to have to pay him like 2 year, you know, whatever, but his contract right now is under market
for sure,
so it's more palatable to trade for, and then you'd still have him on that number next year. You would be worried about what would happen after that, especially if you're giving multiple assets for him, which you'd have to. because there'd be a bidding war.
There's going to be at least two picks.
That's what makes it such a fascinating. That's why Toronto is in the middle of all this stuff, because they have the ability to really shift the landscape. But it's also not been Masai's DNA to go that route. You know, the other thing that's hanging out there too is they're also not far from plummeting into the bottom of the standings or getting in the mix there to be somewhere in the 5, 6, 7 range to jump up in the lottery and potentially get one of those guys.
That's what they did 2 years ago, and they had Scotty Barnes, and it changed the trajectory of their team. But they overachieved last year. They're underachieving this year. Okay, Bontemps's got to go to Celtics shoot-around. McMahon's got to check his messages because God knows what else he's being demanded to tweet. thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast.
I volunteered to tweet that.
Thank you. You're right. All right. Thank you to our producer, Jackson. We will talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.